From Courtside of the Virtual Hardwood, it's the NLSC Podcast, episode number 344. Andrew with you once again, joined by my co-host Derek, also known as Deeper3 in the forum and Deeper384 on Twitter.
Happy to be here again, as always, and we have a lot of fun stuff to cover, so this will be good.
It's the first time, actually, that we've been recording a show in a couple of weeks, because we're coming off our two-part chat with Josh and Dave from Nemo Gamer. It was great to have them on. We recorded that in one marathon session, and we had the show in the can, so we've actually took a week off recording.
Yeah, and I listened to both parts twice. I listened to part one and then part two after you released it, and what a fun conversation.
It was.
You know, I just want to thank Josh and Dave, you know, again for coming on, and it's really nice to, you know, basically take a way back machine and talk about some of the games we grew up with and some of the old systems and the direction of video games. And it's really cool to listen to them talk about how, because they're retro gamers just like us. It's very interesting to hear them talk about how they feel about the state of basketball gaming today and whatnot. And I think that's one of my favorite things to dive into with people like you and I, or who are around our ages that grew up, you know, through the NES days and Super NES and whatnot. So
definitely fun conversations, and absolutely thank you, Josh and Dave, for coming on the show. We are very serious about having you on again at some point in the not too distant future. We don't want to have too many months go or years go between having you on again, so it'll be another fun conversation. And yes, getting those insights into how the games that they grew up playing and many of the games that we grew up playing, how it influenced them with basketball classics and the things to do, the things not to do, I think was a really good conversation, a great conversation, as you said. It's one that I may have to listen to again myself after editing the shows, of course. Although not much editing. We pretty much ran straight through, and it was just a matter of getting a midway point, really, with editing those shows. A lot of fun, a lot of great insights, as I said, and to reflect on some of those things that really make games. And I think it's one of those things that you and I like to cover on the show, not just reacting to news, although we would do that, and we'll be doing that this week, of course, but also really doing those deep dives into basketball gaming, what makes basketball gaming fun, and of course the things that make it not so fun at times. It's one of those things that I really enjoy doing on this show and in my articles, of course, is to break down basketball gaming and look at it in that deep way, and to bring in a couple of guys like Josh and Dave, who, like us, are passionate gamers, but also have that perspective of designing a game, of programming a game and making their own, I think was really special. So that was I was very pleased with how that turned out, and I hope people enjoyed it, because it was a very fun conversation to have. And of course, it goes off the rails sometimes, or off the rails, as we were talking about before we started recording, maybe a bit of a harsh thing, but the tangents that we go on, I think, are so it's fun for us. So I hope it's fun for people to listen to as well, because it goes in some weird and wonderful directions.
Yeah, I mean, I'm never going to agree with you on Donkey Kong Country, but you know, which version is better and whatnot, and we can get into a fight about that.
Can we agree that Donkey Kong 64 was a disappointment?
Oh, yeah. When I think of Donkey Kong 64, real quick, speaking of going off the rails, I think of what happened to Sonic games once they went into that 3D realm.
Yeah.
It's just not the same.
No.
Like, if you look at the spinoffs of Sonic when they do the from-behind view, oh, the 2K cam, right? No, but the, like, from-the-behind view.
Sonic 06.
And they turn it, right, 3D and whatnot. It just doesn't work for Sonic, and I think the same way about Donkey Kong Country. It just doesn't work. And they even tried that with certain games like Earthworm Jim and whatnot.
Yeah,
and it just never, ever hit the same. So I completely agree. So we can definitely agree on that. But I do want to say that one of the best things about talking about basketball gaming is there's just so much material to cover.
Yeah, I mean, decades.
You know, we've been playing since the late 80s. You know, games that came out in the 80s and whatnot. And think about that. I mean, that's 30-plus years of basketball gaming that we can really dive into. It's just cool.
And I'm sure that we will continue to cover those topics. We will continue to reference games that I actually posted some footage of the game that shall not be named on Twitter. Went ahead and got some footage of me playing that game one lazy afternoon.
Well, I still got to get them that Contra, the playthrough of me beating Contra without dying. I got to get that to him.
You know, I actually bought that, the anniversary edition on Steam, because it was on sale. That and Castlevania.
That's what I have. Yeah, I have that too. Yeah.
You got those? I got them both last week on sale.
That's what I'm playing it off of. Yeah, that's how I'm going to record it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, I got that and Castlevania as well, because they're it's very hard to get Castlevania for or at least a PAL version of Castlevania 1, 2, and 3 for the original Nintendo for NES, that's under 150 Australian dollars at the moment. So for me to be able to play an emulated version, a legal emulated version, I'm quite happy with that. So and it was reduced to something like $8, so for that whole series of Castlevania and Contra. So yeah, I got that straight away.
Castlevania 2 is underrated. Simon's Quest, the
Gets a lot
RPG.
of hate, yeah.
It does get a lot of hate because they went RPG with it, kind of non-traditional. But I think it's the soundtrack is memorable, and I think it's a good game. It's difficult.
It is. But three was always my jam. But that's
I was always about the original,
oh
really.
yes, the OG. But yeah, so of course there's our tangents, as we said, for the week. But we do have some news to react to. It's been a month since, or over a month now, since the current gen version of NBA 2K21 came out. There's also patches that have come through in that time that we're going to talk about. And of course, we have our first 2K21 gameplay blog and the gameplay reveal trailer, which kind of mixed. It's fair to say mixed reactions, or depending on where you look on the internet, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think that you have two different types of reactions. You have one of extreme disappointment because people were expecting more from a graphical standpoint, and then also from a player movement standpoint, which I know we're going to get into. And then I'd say that you have the people that say, this blows me away. So I think it's like, it almost seems like there's two extremes. So.
Perhaps always the way in a video game community, but as you said, we will get to that in time. But as I just said, NBA 2K21 current gen has been out since September. Obviously, it's over a month that it has been out. It has received, it's received three patches on the consoles, two on PC. One of them is combined 102 and 103. They're calling patch 104 the third patch. I guess they're just not really counting the day one patch as a separate entity from launch, whatever. The point is, we are up to version 1.04 on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. They've done a lot of things as far as tweaking the shot meter, the shooting mechanics a little bit. They've changed the way that the stick responds as far as whether it's a fast flick or slow flick, where the point appears on the shot meter, where the aim skews left or right depending on the speed. They've put in some technical fixes, and just looking at some of the other things from patch 104 notes. Of course, they've added Halloween to the neighborhood. Exciting! The witch is back, slowing down everybody's frame rates in the neighborhood. They've pushed through some player likenesses, including what looks like the next gen version of Curry that's come through.
Yeah, I got to be honest, I haven't looked at that. I did get a look at the Wiggins, though. I got to look at
That's
the Andrew
improved,
Wiggins.
yeah. Less sharpie.
They've improved that, but they have his hair wrong, I think. And his eyes look a little weird. But, I mean, he looks night and day different than what came with the stock product. But, yeah, I mean, that next-gen Curry looks really good in that lighting on the trailer. Yeah, I mean, one of the things with that patch is I don't know if you saw the tweet from the NBA 2K channel, and it said it was like highlighting what was in the patch, and it just said gameplay improvements,
Yeah.
right? And I think they expanded on them a little bit in the patch notes, like the official patch notes and whatnot. But you know, for PC, I put on the game, and I did have an update, and I don't know if I got those gameplay improvements, but my brother and I were playing it, and we were like, this doesn't feel any different. We didn't have any noticeable difference in the gameplay. So I don't know about what you noticed or anything like that.
I don't feel there's been a major change that my opinion of the gameplay has changed that much, or altered that much, I should say, so I don't use the word changed multiple times in the same sentence. Terrible grammar there. Anyway, no, I haven't really observed a major change. I think shooting may feel a little bit better because they've tuned it a little bit, at least in single player. In multiplayer online, when I've been playing the wreck here and there in my career on PS4, not PC. PC, I'm sticking with single player. It's I'm not shooting. I've got I'm a lob threat. I'm a dunker is my is the archetype I've gone with this year, so I'm not bothering doing any kind of outside shooting.
As we saw with your Sean Kemp-esque video.
Yes. I do actually have the Sean Kemp dunk package equipped, as you probably noticed.
You had, let's see, in that minute and a half highlight reel or whatever it was, I think you probably had about 12 or 13 dunks. I'd have to go back.
At least 8 or 9, yeah. And I use the NBA Jam PC, NBA Jam Tournament Edition PC gameplay music for that, which I felt was very appropriate for all those dunks. But that's been fun because I haven't had to shoot online. Which is always an adventure in and of itself. So I have very mixed feelings about NBA 2K21 to the point where I feel it's a very hit and miss game, and I'd be interested to see if you feel the same way. I'll have a game where it feels kind of okay, and I'm having a bit of fun here and there. I'm bothered by legacy issues, but at the same time, things are working out okay well enough. And then I'll have a game that just feels like the most awful experience I've ever had on the virtual hardwood. And that is kind of hyperbole, because I've also played NBA Live 07. So, you know, let's not go nuts with it. But it feels very hit and miss to me that I'll have a game that feels so awful that I feel so negative about the game after playing this game and want to put it aside. But then I'll play one that's pretty okay or even kind of fun when I get my head around the legacy issues. As I say, very hit and miss, very night and day with some of the experiences. And it can be in the same session as well that I have one game that feels really good and then I play it again and I feel like it's been a completely different game. So it's very strange in that way, to me at least.
I think the Live King and Shady Mike are going to appreciate what I'm about to say. And this is exactly how I feel. Out of the box, the game is incredibly frustrating. And what ends up happening too is because out of the box, you know, without being able to tweak sliders and whatnot, is the experience you get in my team. And modes that are not, you know, play now or my league where you can adjust them, the game does not feel good, right? The players are clunky. There's too many two-man animations. The skating somehow feels worse. The computer has this ridiculous, even though I win, I've talked about this, but there's this like ridiculous inconsistency with the computer where they don't, you know, they don't play by the same rules, it seems, or the same physics. They move out of the way on when they're playing defense, all of this stuff. It depends on how I play the game. If I play in play now, or if I'm playing in my league where I can actually adjust sliders, like I've shown on my gameplay videos on my YouTube, and I can adjust sliders, the game, I can get some enjoyment out of it. And sometimes my brother and I leave a game and we say, hey, you know what? That wasn't that bad. But anytime you step away and you try to play default gameplay, it doesn't feel like a very good game to me. So I also think we've talked about this on many podcasts before. The way you play makes a big difference, like I mentioned with Playgrounds. You know, if I'm playing with my brother, against my brother, he can make adjustments where he can like cut me off from going wide on the baseline for a free dunk, right? He can make up for some of the frustrations just like I can when I'm playing against him. But, you know, for the majority of people, you and I have talked about this, they've basically gone away from couch play, right? It's not as much of a priority anymore. Yeah, and, you know, most people are playing against the computer and whatnot. For those people, those frustrations persist every single game. And they don't have the ability to, you know, have somebody make adjustments and whatnot like an actual human. So I think that's when we talked about, you know, in the past where the AI, the game needs to be much better by default from a gameplay perspective with less frustration. And the AI, you know, it needs to be smarter on defense and offense and more functional by default in order to create, you know, a better all-around experience for everybody.
Whenever you're playing single player, you shouldn't have to madly switch constantly to have to try and defend properly, because there's no way to possibly do it. Even if you switch, that initial burst of speed is not there compared to the CPU. The CPU is still definitely at least 2 steps quicker, I feel, by default. And that again, as you said, that is what you're playing in my career or my team. You don't have the luxury of changing the sliders, trying to adjust for those inconsistencies and imbalance between you and the CPU. So even if you do switch around in my team, for example, playing Triple Threat offline, as I have been doing a little bit, recently, when trying to make up for the CPU standing around and watching their man just explode to the hoop, and there's nothing I can do. I can switch to them, but there's no way I can move quick enough to actually get there and make up for their lack of effort on defense. And yeah, it's just very frustrating. And as you say,
it's when you feel like you're constantly, and I said this, when you feel like, sorry for interrupting, when you feel like you're constantly trying to dodge game issues and make up for game issues,
yeah.
What point do you say, I want to put the controller down because I'm having more frustration than fun?
Yeah, I mean, compared to 2K20, which I played a lot of despite having similar complaints, because there are legacy issues that have been in the game for generations now, for all of the current generation, plus the prior generation as well, or at least towards the end of it there, as it made the transition from PS3 and Xbox 360 to X1 and PS4. Look, legacy issues are going to be a thing. No game is going to be perfect, but the frustration has been there, and you can get used to it to a certain extent, and 2K20 I did and had a good time. I do think there is something very off about the vibe of 2K21, and a lot of it I know is because the 2020 season is still going, so we don't have the updated rosters, we don't have new rookies and things that we would at the bare minimum get in a new game. We would get more new content in the form of upcoming season rosters, pending some final roster updates before the season starts, of course, and opening night rosters, etc. So I think the vibe is off for a start, and that doesn't help at all. But even apart from that, there's just something about the 2K21 that, although I will not say that I've not had any fun with it, but it just feels off a lot of the time, and there is a lot of sloppiness to it, as I've said in previous shows, and you've been pointing out a lot of things on Twitter, which they've been quietly trying to fix here and there with the rosters. So many issues like that, it just feels that there's so many things are afterthoughts and sloppily done. But on top of everything else, there's this whole feeling of something just doesn't feel right or entertaining about the game consistently compared to previous games. And even previous games that I had some complaints about, like 2K19 and 20, I still enjoyed more. And it's
you want to know what I feel like? You want to know what I feel a little bit like? I almost feel like 2K21 feels almost like a mobile game cash cow attempt. Like, that's how I feel sometimes when I'm playing the game. I feel like it's... Okay, so let me try to explain this. You know those freestyle games that are on Steam? Like, they're like Freestyle Rebound and or whatever, the basketball, like, half-court game.
Yeah, 3-on-3 freestyle, like, something, yeah.
Yeah, you watch the gameplay and you're just like, this looks blah. And then they have, like, you know, they want you to buy, like, you know, extra moves and signatures, and there's like a virtual currency aspect to the game and everything. I just feel like the gameplay and just the overall ambiance of the game NBA 2K21 just feels like it doesn't feel like there was an attempt to make a great basketball game. Can I be honest? Like, on, like, in between the lines, it doesn't feel like there was an attempt to give the user the best experience. It feels like the on-court product is an afterthought.
The word cynical cash grab comes to mind. Cynical cash grab.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is the on-floor aspect absolutely took second to the cash grab aspect, right?
Yeah.
And I think that the lack of attention to detail, and that's where I bring up things now, hopefully people understand where I was going with that, where it comes to a situation where it almost feels like a mobile type game or like one of those cash grab games that you find on Steam that has gameplay that comes second to all of these greedy mechanics. So I'm uninspired, let's put it that way, by the gameplay. And like I told you, you know, it kind of discouraged me at the moment from modding 2K21. Because if you remember, I was working, and I've been working on it a little bit here and there, an all-time teams roster mod with no duplicates, adding a bunch of missing players. And I found myself recently going back to my 2K17 rosters. And you and I talked about this a little bit off-air before the call. Sometimes a game, especially if you don't enjoy the game that much, sometimes that can be a turnoff from wanting to be creative with it or post content about
Absolutely.
It. So,
yeah.
And I enjoyed, as you... You know, we enjoyed 2K17 overall, and, you know, I've been enjoying 2K16 with slider tweaks, so I've been going back and touching up those rosters instead. But, yeah, it's frustrating.
You definitely do get drawn back into games that you that you most enjoyed when it comes to modding, and also, and again, we talked about this, as you said, off air, the experience of modding as far as the tools and the procedure, what's familiar, what's fun, what's most enjoyable to do is what we default to. And that's something that we could perhaps talk about another time too, because I think there's a lot of we could dive into there as far as what draws us back to mod old games when we have a new game to mod. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And there's so much about 2K21 that cynical cash grab that you do feel very cynical about. You look at some of the things that they've done with my team, and I think they've done some great stuff with the seasons approach as far as, and they've done an admirable job of pushing through new content for a 2021 season game while the 2020 season is still wrapping up. So I will give them some credit there. And there's definitely some great ideas with the season approach with daily challenges and things. They've really upped the whole agenda. But then you look a little bit closer, and you can see that there's also ways that it's very insidious. For example, there are a lot of challenges based on cards you can collect that have been released in the Idols packs with Manu Ginobili and other such theme packs that have come through. And you look at them, but you have to get those players from those packs. And you're not necessarily going to get those players in the first pack you buy. So, or even the challenges are trying to encourage you to buy as many packs as possible. And there's some good ideas with different challenges that with the tokens that you can unlock players from the token market, which is that's all earned in game. You can't buy tokens, so that's good. And there's more reason to use some of those cards that you would perhaps normally never use because they've got different challenges attached to them. So there's really good ideas in that respect. But then you come back to things like, again, having to get the different packs from the market to get the players to do the challenges. And there's also a new thing this year, Derek, which is quite interesting, that they have originally owned cards or cards that you've bought. The cards are actually marked whether you got them, pulled them from a pack or earned them or whatever, and ones that you bought from the auction house. And there are some challenges that require you to have originally owned players. Now, that on the surface is just an interesting idea of being able to have to meet these requirements for the challenge. But again, to get those originally owned players, the easiest way to get them is to open packs. And of course, you get one player per pack. Some of the premium packs have up to two because they've got so many other things like the badge cards and the contract cards and everything else that comes in the packs, all these consumables and the shoes and whatnot. So to get the player that you need for the challenge, you may have to buy pack after pack and rip pack after pack to actually be able to do the challenge in the first place. So you can see that everything is pushing you in the direction of trying to buy the packs. And what's the quickest way to buy packs? To buy VC, to then buy the packs with real money for the virtual currency. And
Well, a couple of things.
and it's
A
very
couple of
and you can't help but feel cynical when you see stuff like that, because they're good ideas on the surface, but then you look at what they push, and then you remember what Strauss Zelnick said about how recurrent revenue was down for 2K20, and they have ideas to raise it again. We're seeing them play out, and it's not pretty. And I think Shake and Bake called some of them out as well, because it's some of these ideas. Because on the surface, they add all these extra challenges, which is nice, but you can also see what they're doing, very sneakily. And it's, well, maybe it's kind of blatant, I suppose, but it's definitely pushing people towards, or trying their damnedest to push people towards buying the packs so that they can do the challenges, complete the season within 6 weeks. Yeah, and you can't help but feel cynical.
Yeah, so a couple things with that. I was going to bring up that article, that the whole mentioning of the their recurrent revenue was down. Like I was going to bring that up when you were talking about this. But and obviously they're going to take those steps to try to
And
make more
have.
money
And
at
have.
the disadvantage of consumers. A couple things. One, number one, nobody ever said that 2K didn't have some creative people working for them. That they didn't have some great minds working for them, some guys who were great with design and ideas and stuff. It's how that creativity is used and what they're using it for, and who's controlling what that creator is putting out, right? So, and we talked about this. We talked about suits controlling, and not only just suits controlling, the overall direction of the game, but the pressure that it puts on people who work for the company that say, all right, I have to meet these suits demands to a T, and this is what I need to put into the game. So nobody said that they didn't have creative people working for them, but it's how that that creativity is channeled and where they're putting that creativity and how they're using it in the game. As far as my team goes, that mode is such a turnoff. And I am so sick of seeing influencers promote it. And I want to point out the type of promotion that I hate. And I think you can agree with this, and anybody listening to this, it probably makes them mad. You have people like Troyden and many other influencers who say, I just spent $2,500 on my team. Look what I got. I've seen videos that said, I spent $5,000 on my team. Look what I got. I've spent $10,000 on Madden Ultimate Team. Oh, my God, look what I got. You've seen figures that high, Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
And the point is that when influencers do this, how many people – okay, so first off, Flight has over 2 million followers on YouTube, I believe. Over 1 million or 2 million subscribers on YouTube. Troyden has hundreds and thousands of people viewing all of his videos. You have all of these influencers who are promoting it. They're putting, like, in their YouTube videos, they put, like, a dollar sign and then the amount of money they spent. What do you think that gives the message to kids?
Yeah.
What do you think that does?
It buys into the system of microtransactions and everything that...
It encourages it.
Yeah. It promotes it, as you say. It condones it to some extent. But I think it's also... I mean, I suppose it's look, if it's probably entertaining content for people to watch. I'm not judging that. But the problem is it's something that people can't recreate. And that's something why I like to avoid that kind of stuff in my content. Also, I don't like to spend that money on microtransactions. So you won't catch me doing that for the simple fact that I don't have that money to spare and want, even if I did or wouldn't want to spend it on there. But I think it's something, and I suppose people do live vicariously through those videos to a certain extent. But it's one of those things that, yeah, it's not something to encourage. I absolutely believe it's not something to encourage. But at the same time, it's something that's very hard to replicate because, again, people don't have that kind of money lying around if they're not a successful content creator or have that kind of income.
Wouldn't you feel terrible as an influencer if you uploaded a video? Wouldn't you feel terrible as a person? I'm sorry, I think it's absolutely terrible. Wouldn't you feel absolutely guilty for uploading a video onto, say, the NLSC's channel and saying, hey, I spent even $100. I spent $100 on packs. Look what I got. And they show, like, a shiny new card. Mm. Wouldn't you feel absolutely terrible about promoting that and doing that? See, like, I don't understand. I understand people want attention, but, like...
See, I feel if I did that... I would be highlighting the pack odds. I'd be doing it, I think, from a critical standpoint of saying, I spent $100 and this is what I had to, this is what I got, or I had to spend $100 to get this quality card. You know, I think I'd be approaching it from a very critical. You know, I would be using money to try and save people money, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. If you preface it that way,
yeah,
like if that's your title or something, to say, yeah. Right. If you capture it that way and you make it so you're saying, hey, listen, this is not okay. You know,
this is ridiculous. Different. Yeah.
I am so sick because, you know, other influencers feed off of it too. Mm. You know, they see a guy like Troyden or something that says, hey, I spent $2,500 on packs. And then they say, oh, look at all the views and attention he got. I got to do that for my channel. And in my opinion, to me, that is a selfish mindset. Because in a way, those videos promote it as a positive, and at the same time, it kind of influences people So
you know when certain celebrities are criticized for being out of touch because they're making recommendations because they've written a self-help book or something that's... and look, I'm all for self-help and mental health and everything else, don't get me wrong. And I'm not saying that celebrities by default have no insight because they are human beings at the end of the day. But I think a lot of people, Gwyneth Paltrow is one that put a book out there that has all kinds of suggestions that were people saying, well, those of us on an average income, we can't really do this. You know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, and get a nanny for your kids and all this stuff to all this. I'm like, yeah, but we can't really afford that on a regular salary, on a regular wages.
Less than 1% of the population.
Yeah, so it's kind of tone deaf to promote something that is clearly clearly within your means, but for the average person is very bad advice because say, well, okay, if you have all these advantages or money or whatever, you can do that. But for everybody else, it's kind of advice that we can't use. And I think it kind of it's a similar kind of thing I feel to that, because if you are making that kind of money, if that kind of and if doing that drives your revenue as well, then it's ends up being a drop in the bucket for you, and it's an investment for you. For everybody else, it's a waste of money.
I agree 100%. And that's why when I created a thread on Operation Sports about like gaming PCs, right? These are some really high, priced ones, and some that are like out of my price range and whatnot, and it's not something that I'd be willing to put that much money for. And I put in the thread, I said, you can, and I gave options in it. You can buy this gaming PC that can run the game on high or ultra, for $500. So you don't have to break the bank, but here are some options if you have a little bit more money and are willing to do that. And it's about understanding your audience, right? And being fair with what you're promoting or talking about and everything. And I felt pretty good about that thread, just for the sheer fact that, I laid out all the options and, I felt like I was being fair to the audience. So I know that's kind of a weird example, but the point is that these videos don't do like they don't really demean it. Like I watch these videos sometimes just to kind of get an idea of what influencers are saying, and they're just like, their mouths wide open and being like, "Oh, look what I got," right? From a
The
pack that they
classic
spent
thumbnail.
all of this money on. Right. Yeah, like the classic thumbnail. Troyden just put one out recently with like his mouth wide open. But yeah, it just drives me nuts.
I think
It drives me nuts.
another example that of what I did was I recently had a Friday Five about how to have a no money spent experience, where I'm offering up tips of how to avoid, especially the temptation, how to avoid the tricks, because it is obviously social engineering, psychological tricks to make you want to spend, to putting the whole putting a grind in the game that.
Yeah, we talked about the pack opening process,
Yeah,
even the flashing lights and all that. Yeah.
absolutely. It's all stuff that you have to resist, basically, to resist the urge to be sucked into that, to also know that you're going to have to grind to commit yourself to that grind, but also maximize your VC earning by doing these kinds of things. I feel that's more of the content that we should be doing for each other as gamers, because it's not pandering to what the suits want. It's also sending a message that this kind of stuff is not, I mean, it's very normalized now, obviously, but it sends the message that it's something that we don't want to support, and it's helpful. And I also mentioned this as well with my things that we've learned about the community from NBA 2K21, especially with shooting. And it's one of these things where people will put it out, oh, and you're trash and everything. It's exposed to the people who aren't good and everything. I think if you support the shooting mechanics in 2K21, which if you are enjoying them, you're certainly entitled to that view, then put out tips videos. Show people how it is such a great system. Show people how to use it. And of course, there are things like good jump shots videos and things like that. I know Agent 00 has done a lot of those over the years. But see, that kind of content, how to shoot, how to play, strategies, tips videos, that kind of
Right, but
content.
don't ignore the video I show of somebody getting 8 or 9 layups missed in a row with the cursor right in the middle
That too, yeah.
of the window. Like, don't ignore that. Like, don't tell me that the system is fair or challenging or people have to get good when the mechanics don't support it. Like,
Yeah.
you and I, we talked about this, and it's on our, I think a couple of them are on our highlight videos. There were shots you were taking where the cursor was right in the middle of the window and you were clanking them. And then there were shots you were taking where they were outside the window and you were making them. That is not skill-based. That is faulty mechanics. That is closer to a random result rather than a skilled result. So again, if you're, there's a whole thing where, yeah, show people videos of, how you get your success. But if I show you videos of black and white, like there's no arguing that, of over like complete inconsistency with the shooting mechanics, and I say, hey, this is a problem, these are random results, and you ignore that, and then you go back up on your Twitter and you lay out another tweet that says, oh, all these people complained, now they patched it or whatever. don't ignore what I just showed you. That's the point. And like I said, you and I are not beginners.
No.
Right?
No.
You
not
know,
at all.
I've been playing 2K since the original. I talked about, you know, I had NBA Fastbreak 98, which was technically, quote unquote, you know, the first visual concepts game. And I am very familiar with the mechanics of these games over the years. And I'm telling you right now, don't ignore an issue. Like, that is an issue. There was issues with the shooting.
And the, and those criticisms are also important to put out there in video form. And as far as educating fellow gamers, giving everybody an idea of what to expect beyond developer blogs, you know, reviews and things like that, and critiques, video essays are so important, on top of tips and tricks videos, etc., strategies. So there's so much that we can do with our content one way or the other that is to the benefit of gamers. Now, I think that's what I always try to do with my content, and I feel that you do the same, is that it's coming from that personal reaction to the games, of course, but also looking out, I think, for our fellow gamers and saying, well, this is the kind of content that we would like to consume. This is the content that would be helpful to us and can be helpful to other people. And I think that's what we should be doing as a community, not judging, not be waggling that scolding finger and saying noob, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, get good. But say, okay, well, if you've got the knowledge and you've got the skill and the sticks to continue succeeding online, show other people how to get good, if that's what all it takes. You know, they're still going to have to practice on the sticks to actually get good. But you can say, well, this is how this works. And it shows that subject matter knowledge, you know, yeah.
Yeah, but I just want to say, sorry for grabbing you, but I want to say again. Again, if the mechanics don't support it, no matter how much time you spend in the practice gym, the result may not be fair.
True, yeah.
That's trying to point out. That's the thing that people are not, like, I don't care if you're in the practice gym. Somebody pointed this out because they showed video of it. They're shooting, and they're getting the cursor right in the middle of the window, and they missed like 8 shots in a row with a good shooter, and they're just missing, and they're missing, and they're missing. And then they're missing, and then they get one random make with it slightly off from the center, and then they start missing again. And it's like that person goes into the practice gym, and they're doing those shots and whatnot. There is no get good there, right? He is timing the shot correctly, or as close as he can possibly get to green, and he's getting a random result. So that's the whole thing about, hey, you're go get in the gym or get good, or oh, you guys are complaining because you're noobs and stuff like that. I can show you video of how the mechanics are faulty with it. Why don't you acknowledge that? Like, I just don't understand why people won't acknowledge that. I know I sound like I'm a little bit passionate and coming off a little bit, you know, I don't know, animated here, but I get sick of showing this to people and then they don't acknowledge it.
There really seems to be that reluctance to criticize. And I know with a lot of content creators, there is that pressure on them to keep their perks, which is a real shame that there is that pressure there. Because it never used to be to that extent, but it has come to that extent. Who wants a logo? Who wants to be recognized by 2K? And that is a shame because it means so much. It's so valuable for people's content to have that connection, to have that working relationship. So it's one of those things where I can't begrudge people for trying to work within the system, but at the same time, it also breeds that feeling, that idea that you're ungrateful or not allowed to constructively criticize a game. And I've seen that with other games. I've seen that with NBA Playgrounds as well, when the community for NBA Playgrounds was really taking to the game, and people had some really good feedback in the Facebook group, and they were just getting shouted down constantly by people who were saying, no, this game is great, and oh, you just suck at the game or whatever. And we've seen some things with Playgrounds and Playgrounds 2 that could have been a lot better. Could Saber have managed to do it technically? Possibly, whether they could have achieved that or not with the program, with the code they've got, etc., I don't know. But I think a lot of really good feedback was shouted down at the time. I actually wrote an article on Monday Tip-Off. It's okay to constructively criticize NBA Playgrounds. And it's something that applies to Live as well, and also to 2K. There shouldn't be that reluctance. Certainly couch it constructively. Don't be a jerk about it. We've said this on many shows before. You and I and Ben and I and Kenny, we've all talked about this on previous shows that we're very much about the constructive feedback and not being jerks about it. But at the same time, it can go too far the other way, where constructive feedback is shouted down, where it's discouraged because it's seen as being rude towards the developers, or you know, I'm happy with the game, so you're just a complainer. I think that's a very toxic attitude. Something else I touched upon with my article about the community issues that 2K21 has spotlighted. And it's something that, again, I think as much as we can in our content, that we should discourage that attitude, discourage the toxicity, and encourage those honest conversations, that honest critique, that valuable critique and constructive critique that we put forward, and also helping each other as well. But yeah, we do see them getting criticism of 2K21 getting shut down. People are still feeling very mixed feelings with the patches coming through. I'm looking at some of the other things that they've been fixing up, some technical issues. I know the Live King finally managed to get his My Player issue resolved three patches in, so that's good news at least. They still haven't fixed the issue with the classic shorts. Mau Mau 78 in the forum has brought that up. That's still something they haven't fixed. They have fixed some other technical issues. The daily bonuses are still bugged in My Career. Still not happening with that. They're also preparing for some new content, and including the My Team Unlimited tournament with the $250,000 prize, and some other live events coming up and whatever. Live events, that's NBA Live. Some neighborhood events and so forth that they've adjusted there. And they've made some changes to park dribbles and so forth, and try to tune the game. But like I say, a month in, 2K21, I still have very mixed feelings about. It's still, as I said, hit and miss. Some games I feel like this is kind of okay and having a decent time or a pretty good time. Other times I just find myself thinking, I don't think I can play this for months at a time. And not looking forward to the next gen version if they're going to be doing some of the same concepts, even if it is built from the ground up, and we will get into that. And it's, yeah, it's very disappointing to in many ways. And yeah, it's yeah, I do not think it is one of their best games. I'm not going to say it's one of the worst games ever made, because I think it's still too competent of a product. But I do think it is one of the worst of this generation, and it's hit and miss at best. And one thing, Derek, that really annoyed me in recent weeks, and I know I'm not alone in this, playing in the rec, and they had a double My Rep event going, and the event ended while the game was playing, so I just got kicked from the game, lost all my VC, lost all VC progress, all badge progress, My Rep progress, out the window, because the event ended. So rather than just saying, okay, well, the event ended so you don't get the rewards, just kicked me from the game. And I thought that was ridiculous. I don't know if that happened in... I don't remember it happening in previous years, so maybe it does, maybe it's not. If it did work that way in previous years, it's even worse that it's such a terrible legacy issue. But the point is, there's so many things like that that haven't been addressed in the game, and instead we just get, oh, the new neighborhood, the 2K Beach, new bells and whistles, but so many things about the core aspect of the gameplay, not just even, or the gaming experience, not just the gameplay, but just the way the modes are designed and things like that, that you get kicked in the middle of an event, middle of a game if an event ends. There's just so many things like that that are just so sloppily done as of 2K21 that it's just so disappointing.
I mean, we've talked about this before. If it doesn't have anything to do with them making more money, then it's not going to be fixed.
Just get fixed,
right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to touch on this real quick about Playgrounds. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. There's a reason why they're not, you know, we don't see a V3, a Playgrounds 3 yet, or like talk about it or anything like that. I think that the game didn't do as well as they were hoping.
No.
That's just my opinion. And
Battlegrounds is getting roasted, by the way.
What was that?
Because Saber has more recently made WWE Battlegrounds.
Well, yeah,
It's not turned out well at all. It's getting roasted. So it's and for similar reasons.
Yeah, I'm sure
similar reasons to 2K Playgrounds 2, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and so as far as, and I wanted to say I'm a little bit sad about something, but Playgrounds 1 and Playgrounds 2. So I finished the with my brother every game. We finished the entire tournament mode. So we did all of the challenges, all of that stuff. So we're 4 for 4 across the board. It took us about 11 or 12 hours, I think, of total play time on Playgrounds in mm-hmm. order to finish that up. And now the replayability is just kind of shot. as far as that game. It's a little bit short on content, and that's where NBA Playgrounds 2 comes in, where you can play, you know, challenge yourself through seasons, use different teams through those seasons, stuff like that. However, I think we've played Playgrounds 2 about 28 to 30 hours now total. So we're getting playability out of those games. But I wanted to point something up. You brought this up, I think, in an article or in the thread before. The pack odds on Playgrounds 2, once 2K took over, suck.
Yeah.
I just want to put that, you know, in Playgrounds 1, you could, you know, you'd get done a tournament and you'd have like four or five packs to open and you'd get a few legends each time. And then, you know, you can buy a few packs on Playgrounds 2 and get one or none, you know, after an entire season of play. It's also a lot harder to get packs. Yeah. And it just kind of shows what happens when a big company takes over, right?
Yeah.
Because when 2K took over Playgrounds, it all of a sudden, you know, it was more about VC and stuff like that. And it's just, it was just kind of frustrating. You know, it's frustrating to play it at times because of that.
I think I've mentioned on the show, I know I wrote an article about the putting the 2K in 2K Playgrounds, where I did touch on a lot of those issues, where on one hand, it got us MJ and Kobe and Kareem in the game and some of the legends that were not licensed before. But then on the flip side, you do have the Golden Bucks, which is their version of VC, and things like that. I actually wanted to ask, with the original Playgrounds, because of course you got the code, it's no longer available in the store, but you're able to track down a copy and redeem it, and it will still work if you have an unclaimed code. If it is a Steam key that's not already been entered, you can get one and it will actually work. What's the last challenge you have? Is that Vegas that you've got?
It's Vegas.
So even that, because they did add some more as DLC, but that's no longer available. So there is a bit more that you can play beyond Vegas with the DLC that came through, but of course that's no longer available. So that extra content and the extra players that they added, unfortunately, I don't think you'll be able to get them unless they're still accessible through the game interface. But I think it's, if they're not in the Steam store, I think you might be out of luck.
Yeah, I will say this one thing I liked a lot better about the original Playgrounds. Yeah, it lacked depth, lacked content. That sucks that I can't get that new content, the DLC, because they just basically tried to make it like NBA Playgrounds, the original, never existed once 2K took over.
Exactly.
One thing that I really loved are the challenges. I loved the whole, you got to get six blocks in a game, you got to get six steals in a game, and that gets you a gold trophy, right?
Yep.
Or, you know, you have to get, you know, you have to score 35 points in the game. Because what it did was it made you think about who you were using. You know what, when you're doing the block challenge, you want to use, you know, we had gotten the 76ers, Wilt Chamberlain. You probably want to use Wilt Chamberlain. But if you're doing, you know, a three-point challenge, you know, we used Rick Barry and Dirk Nowitzki. Like, if we had to hit a certain amount of three-pointers, like 10 in a game. So, like, that added a whole new element, and we really had a blast doing that on the original Playgrounds. And then, of course, when they went to Playgrounds 2, they moved into a season format. And it seems like they removed those challenges and tournaments and whatnot. So I really like that about the original Playgrounds.
It gives you an incentive to use different players. And that's something that some of the things that they've done with my team this year in 2K21, I like that they're doing that if you unlock these players through the token market and whatnot, that there's reason to use players that normally you would just... In the past, you would just get them to flesh out your collection to get the different collection level rewards, which they've moved away from in favor of the season approach this year. There is still some targets you can hit as far as having 7,500, 200 cards. It really then just jumps up to about 500, 1,000, etc. It's more about the season approach and the XP of getting it. But to that point, they've made it more likely, more incentive rather, to use different cards that you normally you would just have sitting there in the collection, that you actually do have to substitute them in or not. And I like what they've done with that. Of course, again, there's those insidious things that they've done as far as trying to force you to buy packs. And that is something that the original Playgrounds did very well, as you said. It makes you want to change things up, level up every player, use every player, or certainly a bigger variety of players to meet those challenges. So it was definitely worth doing it that way. And there's merit to the season approach as well in 2K Playgrounds 2, but especially with the amount of leveling up you need to do and the amount of players in 2K Playgrounds 2, I think they could have handled that better.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like I said, we've gotten a lot of playability and a lot of fun with them. So I'm going to say that overall, for my brother and I think both games were successful as far as giving us more positive than negative experience. You know how I feel. You know, let's put it this way. I got NBA Playgrounds, the original, for $5. So that's what the key
deal,
was. The,
frankly, the yeah.
And, you know, if you go to the movies to watch a 2-hour movie, you're spending like $18 to $20 on a ticket a lot of the time, right? So the way I look at it is that's like, what, 2 hours of entertainment at the movies for that price. And then for 1/4 of the price, I got 12 to 13 hours of fun entertainment that I was able to share with my brother.
Yeah,
for
not
$5.
Bad, not
so,
bad at
like,
all.
I look at it like kind of like that. So, you know, like I said, I got my money's worth. Let's put it that way.
So, summing up, 2K21 current gen at the moment, I think we both feel a bit disappointed by it. We'll see how it goes as far as further patches and whatnot. But I don't think it's going to get that much better, because I think it really is about the next gen at this point. That there may be some improvements, but it really does feel like things with the shot meter in particular, and we'll get into this as we get into the next gen gameplay trailer and first gameplay blog, it does feel like current gen was very much that cynical cash grab, but also treating us kind of like having to pay to be guinea pigs to really test out some of these concepts that are coming for next gen.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing. I think that a lot of tweaks that they'd be making for the next gen version, because we already know that was in the making, I think a lot of the tweaks are going to be based off of the feedback they received off of this, you know, this current gen version. So yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing.
And there's a couple of things in that gameplay blog that I think bear that out, but we will put that aside. I'm sure we will come back to 2K21 current gen in the weeks to come as we continue to play that game. As I said, I don't think I'm going to be able to get a new console at launch. At the moment, the EB Games in Australia is perhaps not even getting new PlayStation 5s until 2022. I'm not sure if I'll be even able to get one at this point. Certainly, perhaps probably not until the early 2021. So, yeah, I don't know if I'll be even able to play the next-gen version anytime soon, but it is what it is. And, of course, the next-gen trailer came through earlier this week. It was the gameplay reveal. It's in-game assets and whatnot shows Luka Doncic running out of the tunnel. It's spotlighting the new crowd AI and the reactions and everything. And, as you said at the top of the show, Derek, a lot of people were very impressed by the graphics. Some people seem to expect more, but what did you expect, and what was your reaction to the trailer?
First off, you know, I might not get a system on launch day either. I stood in line for an Xbox Series X for an hour, and by the time I got to the register, there were none left. So I didn't
Common
end
story.
Up getting. Yeah, exactly. So, and I've also seen people like Obi. I know he listens to this podcast. I believe he said that he had ordered from Target. And like online, and then he I think they told him that there was something wrong with his order, so he's not going to get it.
Ugh.
So there's people that ordered online and pre-ordered and whatnot that are also getting screwed here. So it's
also sorry to interject, but the other issue with the Xbox in particular, because of the very similar naming convention, there's been a lot of people that have ended up buying Xbox One X's instead of the Series X's.
I got to tell you something. That is an easy mistake to make, especially if you're a parent buying
yes,
for your kids.
Yes.
And the reason is because they look at it and they see a $500 price point or a $400 price point, and they automatically think that it's the new system.
That looks the new one, yeah.
And
yeah.
Because it says Xbox One X, Series X, so disappointing. And I feel so bad for those people, those parents and whatnot. I don't think that's them being dumb.
No. Either. No.
I think it's an easy mistake to make, and especially because if you go on Amazon right now or Best Buy or any of these sites, what you're going to see is you're going to see the prices for the Xbox One X at about $400 to $500. So when they see that, they say, hey, this can't be the old system, right? Why would they sell that for $400 or $500? So they
yeah.
buy it.
Why indeed?
And yeah, so that's – yeah, I saw that article, and I was super, super sad, mostly for the parents, because I don't think kids are making these mistakes as much.
No,
I think
it
it's
is definitely the parents, I would have to imagine.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, it's parents. So what do I think? What do I think about the gameplay? I think that anybody who says that it's a huge jump in graphics needs to take a step back and look at the lighting that we achieved in 2K14 for PS4 and Xbox One, as far as the lighting and the reflections and whatnot. And then also look at PC mods that people are making, like Dibes, I want to say how it's pronounced, and how they're doing with, you know, different filters, lighting, different graphics mods, and all of that stuff. And outside of obviously improved faces, like Steph Curry's face looks awesome, right? Outside of improved faces, as far as like the whole atmosphere goes, it is not as big of a jump as I was expecting. And you know, you and I are both about gameplay, right? Like the gameplay, the graphics will always come second to gameplay. But yeah, if I'm being honest, they didn't push the limit on last gen, so PS4, Xbox One. And I definitely don't think this is close to pushing the limit on PS5. I mean, if you want to try to be positive about it, you could say, hey, you know, you look at this trailer and say, hey, they have room for improvement, right? Hey, they could, you know, there's areas that they can improve. So for me, graphically, it's not the jump that I was expecting, especially from those graphics, the graphics from the gameplay video. You saw the gameplay video of Steph Curry driving, right? And like they're from the regular 2K cam. And it still not only looks very much like a video game, it is a video game. It looks very much like a video game, but it honestly doesn't look more impressive than a lot of mods that I've seen out there for gameplay for PS4 and Xbox One. So no, I'm not overly impressed with the graphics. For the gameplay side of it, I mentioned this, and I think it turned some people off too. Not that I mentioned it, but that turned people off from the trailer because they didn't really notice it. Until I pointed it out. But on the Tim Hardaway drive, you can see he's floating above the court, right? And his speed looks like it's breaking too, like his acceleration and his speed is breaking on that drive. So one of the things that they talked about in the dev blog, you and I talked about this before, is they said that they were going to be building it from the ground up, like a completely different team working on 2K21 for PS5 than that was working on PS4. And I told you that I really was hoping that one of the biggest improvements, you know, built from the ground up was going to be on player movement. You know, players moving more realistically, not bobbing their heads, not running like Bigfoot, proper change of direction that feels and looks better, less skating, proper foot planning, all of this stuff. And when I'm looking at that trailer, and I know that it says it's a work in progress under it, I am seeing exactly the same animations. I can't discern it. Like I can't like distinguish it differently. It looks like the same as 2K21 for PS4 and Xbox One. Like the way the players are moving looks exactly the same. And then when you look at that video of Curry driving the lane and you see like that blow by animation and where it's a 2-man animation and he's being kind of dragged sideways with the defender, that looks exactly like 2K21 from PS4. So if I'm being honest with you, I'm not impressed. And if anything, I'm more concerned.
About the rain. Yeah. I'm not going to say that it looks bad because it doesn't look bad at all. There are some faces that look phenomenal. The lighting is definitely, they've been able to do things with lighting that they could have done on last gen, because we've seen it, and like you said, we've seen it in PC mods and whatnot, but it seems like they're on the right track, which is nothing to be sneezed at. My problem is that my biggest concerns are not about how the players look, because they look great. I figured they would. Lighting and everything, I knew they were going to make some enhancements in that area. It looks fine. Like there's nothing about it as far as, like I say, look, oh, this is some kind of, you can't make some kind of hyperbolic, you know, this looks like PS2 graphics statement. There's no way you could say anything like that. Or like, we could do this on the PC, on NBA Live 06 PC with mods. Not to this extent. We definitely could not have done that with some of the faces and whatnot. And the animations, certainly. But we do see those familiar animations, which I'm not surprised by, because obviously they're not going to replace the whole bank of animations Certainly in a work in progress trailer, but even by the, I expect a lot of familiar animations, because you're not going to throw out all that big bank of animations that they've built up, especially when it's hard to get a lot of people in to mocap in the current situation with the pandemic and whatnot. I looked at that trailer and it didn't. I wasn't disappointed by the graphics, but I looked at that trailer and I thought this just doesn't hype me up, because I have so many concerns about the game over the last few years that have nothing to do with the aesthetics as such, that, and it's like those concerns are not going to be allayed for me until I get my hands on the sticks, or at the very least I hear from other people whose opinion I feel I can trust say, hey, this actually does feel rather different, then I'll start feeling more optimistic about it. And there is stuff in the gameplay blog that we'll get to that does sound promising, but we have heard it before, and we've been promised the world before and not been and not even delivered a single hemisphere, so to speak. But I looked at that trailer and I just didn't feel hyped, not because I thought the graphics were bad, or anything like that. And there were things about it that I thought looked quite good. Although, again, as you noted, we did see some of the floating, some of the skating, the sliding, etc. And even if you want to chalk it up to a work in progress, early version, whatever. But my biggest concerns, a trailer like that is just not going to be able to allay them. And there's some snippets of, not raw gameplay footage, but wide gameplay footage, because a lot of it's cinematic, as most trailers are. Then there's some parts of the trailer where you see, not raw gameplay from a gameplay angle, but certainly you see more of the play and the players moving around and everything. And it's hard to really discern too much from it. And that's the main thing, is that there's all of my questions and concerns about NBA 2K21 and NBA 2K moving forward, based on my complaints, my concerns from the past few years in particular, the trailer just doesn't answer them. So, like you, like, I just see the trailer, I can say, oh, you know, that looks pretty cool. But, you know, it looks cool, but maybe the best way I can really sum it up. And the but is that there is so much that the trailer can't tell me that I'm concerned about, that I'm not as optimistic that they're going to be able to address, even in a game that is supposedly built from the ground up. Because again, as we've said before, even if it is built from the ground up, there's going to be some things that they're going to be able to resolve, especially if they're throwing out some code and tech that wasn't working very well, like the motion engine that came in 2K18, for example. But it's still going to be a 2K game, an NBA 2K game. There's going to be some design concepts in there that if they don't change, then it doesn't really matter if it's built from the ground up or not. They're going to be replicated to some extent, and that's the concern.
Yeah, a couple things really quick. One, everybody who listens to my commentary about basketball video games knows that I'm the complete opposite of a graphics snob.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not about graphics. I'm about gameplay. That's what it's all about for me. It's why I can go back and play some of the titles that we've talked about in the past, some early 2000s and even 90s titles that have strong gameplay, and I can look past the graphics, right?
Absolutely.
So I want to make that point. But on the graphics end, before I get into the gameplay real fast again, on the graphics point, what's frustrating is for people to say things like, oh, well, we maxed out on 2K21 for this gen, or we maxed out on PS4 and Xbox One, when there are quality of life changes that can be made and are being made by PC modders that do nothing that impact the frame rate, right? You were talking about things like adding muscle to players, right? Veins, or like actually like making them look more like athletes, adding better lighting, you know, giving better lighting to the crowd, adding floor reflections, stuff like that. You know, modders on the ground floor are creating these mods for these games and making them look a lot better than what 2K gives us in a default product. So from the graphics perspective, it's not that I am concerned or that it bothers me that it wasn't a huge jump, really. It's more of the fact that all the commentary from people stating that they maxed out on PS4 and Xbox One, and that even trying to say that PS5 is a gigantic jump from what we were looking at there. But I know what I'm seeing with my own two eyes, and I know that what the capabilities are, right? So that's the thing I wanted to say about graphics. As far as gameplay, it goes beyond to what we see in a gameplay trailer, because people have different play styles and whatnot. I mean, excuse me, in an official gameplay video, which we're going to probably get soon. It goes with, we talked about this, the badge system, right? How overpowering is the badge system going to be? How overpowering are two-man animations going to be? I don't expect them to remove all animations from past games. In fact, I want them to keep a lot of them. A lot of the poster dunks look awesome, right?
Yeah.
A lot of the signature dunks look awesome. A lot of the size-ups look true to life and awesome. There's some shooting animations, although a lot of them are poor, in my opinion, but there's some shooting animations I'd like them to keep in because they're awesome. So I'm not even saying that either. When I say built from the ground up, I was expecting, I guess, like an overall bigger change.
Physics, code.
Stuff like that. Yeah. So So I just wanted to, I wanted to clear that up about graphics too. But at the same time, it is about gameplay. It is about like how it feels on the stick. So we're not going to truly know what's up. We can get an idea of stuff that's going to bug us, that we can see it, but we're not going to get an idea of truly what's up until we get our hands on it.
And you touched on something there as far as maxing out the technology of the current generation, and I'm sure we'll touch on it as we go through some of the points of the next gen gameplay blog, the first one that we received this week, which was about fundamentals, about shooting, dribbling, and passing. But you mentioned the tech maxing out and some of the things that we've seen on this generation. Comparing it to NBA Live, and of course 2K is ahead of NBA Live in so many areas, I should say. But there's a couple of things that NBA Live's tech has done. For all of the problems the engine has had for NBA Live of this past generation, it's done some things surprisingly better than 2K. One of them is rim interactions. You look at some of the rim interactions on dunks in NBA Live, with players actually grabbing the rim on dunks, it's actually been a lot better than some of the 2K games. And the other thing that Live has had, and I don't know if you've ever noticed this, I've only noticed it because it was brought up on a couple of previews and at the community event I went to for Live 16. But if you go in and you look at the EA Ignite engine was kind of a flop for NBA Live, and there's probably a lot of reasons behind that, which we'll go into at another time, I'm sure, as we talk about that and what that generation has meant for NBA Live over the past decade. But I don't know if you've noticed this, but you don't really notice unless you go into instant replay and look, but some of the way that the players will interact with each other in NBA Live, and if you even look at the way when they move, that the skin and the muscles move over the skeleton in NBA Live is actually surprisingly realistic, and that was one of the things that the EA Ignite engine was all about. And it didn't really come to fruition as far as making that great basketball sim, but there's some tech in there as far as skeletal movements and muscle movement and the skin moving over the player's bone that is very impressive. So there's a lot of impressive stuff that has been possible over the past generation, even back to the PS3 360 generation. So I agree, it's not about maxing it out, because we have seen a lot of stuff that's from 2K or Live that's been very technologically advanced that is probably going to be sold as a new thing on the next generation, yet we have seen it before.
Yeah, exactly. And when I was talking about that in the thread too, there are loads of games that on PS4 that achieved a type of photorealism, right? That also have a lot of processes going on. We understand that, you know, all the processes can impact frame rates and, you know, what they can do, and they can only pack only a certain amount of processes into these scenes and whatnot on the floor and into the gameplay. But there's lots of games out there that achieved a much higher graphical result that have a ton of things and a ton of processing going on on the screen. You know, one of the games that I can use as an example is a game like Horizon Zero Dawn for PlayStation 4, which is a PS4 exclusive. But again, there's modders out there that are achieving this with no FPS hit, right? Which just shows you that they could have done more with that technology and not impacted frame rates. So that all of that info is out there. There's videos uploaded every day from modders using modded gameplay with improved lighting and improved reflections and graphics and lighting in the crowd and whatnot. As far as Live goes, I think I talked about some of the pluses with the graphics on a game like NBA Live 16 when I was actually playing that, and I jumped into Ultimate Team with the servers up and whatnot. And there were some good things that they did with that game as far as graphically and far as far as lighting and as far as, you know, the players' body types and all of that stuff. So, yeah, Live did, you know, over the course of time, do some things that were pretty impressive from a graphical standpoint.
And again, it goes to show that the tech is there for games. I think the Division was another game that people were really looking at the power of the current gen consoles.
Yeah, I think that was one. I think that there was a couple other games too that there's some first person shooters. Like there's a game called Generation Zero, and you feel like you can walk into that game. Like the graphics are that good on the game, and there's so much processing going on when you're in a battle with, you know, 5, 6, 7 different robots and things are flying across the screen and you have a ton of inputs on your controller that you need to use, and like you literally feel like you can walk into that game. It's crazy.
So the gameplay blog came out that they referred to 3 gameplay blogs that will be coming out in the near future. I think a few of us expected them to be all be coming this week, and there was I think maybe some misleading language there. 2K and some misleading language. That's never happened before, has it? But in any case, the gameplay blog came out. My general overview of it, before we get into some of the points, Derek, is that, again, there's a lot of things in there that sound good and will be good if they come to fruition. The problem is, it's hard not to be cynical, because we have heard a lot of these things before, a lot of these great promises about gameplay improvements and whatnot, and we've even seen some of the specifics mentioned in previous years, and even for the current gen, for 2K21. And they haven't quite come to fruition, and we've found that previous blogs have revealed to be flat out lies as far as talking about things that are supposedly improvements and design choices, but the next year they've admitted, oh no, that was a band-aid fix for the problem with the motion engine. And it's on one hand, it's refreshing to hear, but at the same time, it's, well, how do we ever trust you again on a developer blog? But my general overview, as I said, there is some really good things in the blog and some promising things that if they come to fruition, it will mean a jump for next gen. Again, not because necessarily the tech has to be there, but because it's been built from the ground up and they've been able to throw out code. And a few of us have talked about this in the forum. It's not so much the next gen of power so much as being able to throw out code and tech that isn't working. But there are things that do sound good, but it's hard not to be skeptical.
Yeah, I mentioned that on the MLC thread. I don't look at these dev blogs anymore with a lot of seriousness. Like I'm not looking at these and expecting, you know, the whole game to change and everything to be great. I mean, how many years have we been told that skating, you know, the foot planning was improved?
As like of this year.
Yeah, exactly. The last few years, you know, we've worked on foot planning and it's much better. And then obviously the paid reviews echo that. They're like, oh, the foot planning feels much better. And then you get into the game and you're skating all over the floor like you're playing ice hockey.
That's a frustrating thing that we've talked about before, right? Is that, sorry to interrupt, that a lot of the influencers and the reviews don't hold them accountable for the gameplay blogs and say, well, they kind of almost just repeat the gameplay blogs as promotion, as opposed to saying, well, this is what we were promised and this is what we're getting, which is a very important part of reviewing a game and giving consumers, gamers, this idea of what they're actually getting, as opposed to the preview season hype. And there's no accountability there, and it's very frustrating. I mean, people like us do as content creators, but the widespread around the community, there's not enough of it, especially from very prominent and within gaming journalism as well. There's a lot of problems with that as well.
Yeah, the reviews just feel scripted. You know, the other point too, yeah, you know, how many years did they say that defensive intelligence has improved?
Every year,
and
pretty
how
much,
times
yeah.
Did they say, yeah, how many times did they say that they worked on certain things with the defensive intelligence, and then still I'm playing this game and you could do this on 2K20, you know, I'm on 2K21, and I can just run wide on the fast break and just, you know, and get free dunks. Or defense is just completely lost constantly, and I can just throw it to a big guy who's running the middle of the floor and continually get dunks. Or their double team logic, and they're double teaming after you make one or two shots and leaving people wide open under the rim, which would never happen. So, how many years have they talked about that? You know, how many years have they said that they were that they worked on clipping and body, you know, body to body physics and whatnot? And I just showed it on the PS5 trailer where, you know, Draymond Green is going through a Mavericks player, like his body is going through the Mavericks player. So you're seeing it even on the gameplay trailer for PS5. But how many years have we been promised less clipping?
Yeah.
And
to the defensive point, you may recall this. I forget which game it was. It was a few years back now that it was promised that players had better awareness of the ball. We wouldn't see any of the can steals and the psychic steals because if CPU players had their heads their backs to the play, they would miss defensive rotations. They wouldn't be able to make interceptions and steals because those cheap interceptions because they're not looking at the ball. But that very same year, the same thing comes out. You make that pass, the CPU player, eyes in the back of their head, sticks out their hand, makes that psychic steal. That's still a problem as of 2K21, and the canned turnovers, the canned steals, the canned interceptions. A few years ago, that was supposed to be all cleaned up, but it hasn't been.
Still there. Yeah, they're still there in 2K21. They're absolutely still there. You know, the other thing, too, is just recently, you know, he talked about we're trying to bring more fun into the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they release the game, and it's more frustrating than ever because of the shooting mechanics.
Yeah.
And because of all the legacy issues that are still in the game. So, again, you know, I look at these dev blogs as more of a marketing tool, as more of a thing to get people talking. And, you know, it gets talked about in the reviews, too. And, you know, sites like Operation Sports, which we've talked about before, can be pretty biased. If you ever looked at the impressions thread over there and whatnot. So... And it's also incredibly influential. So I think that it's frustrating, and it gets old year after year seeing this stuff and then picking up the game and it feeling the way it does. So
and of course it works because here we are breaking it down. We're about to go through some of the points. So it does become a talking point. But and it's a shame because you do read some of these points. I will be reading off my summary here. If people want to get the full scoop, I would recommend checking out the full blog just to see what Mike Wong Baluba said in his original words. But I feel I have concisely summarized it here, so I will begin with some of these points from my breakdown, which I posted on the main page. So shot aiming is going to be similar to current gen post patch. We figured that speed of the pro stick movement determining whether the ideal release point skews left or right. Again, that is something that was added by I think patch 102 or 103. Additionally, the speed of this is new for next gen. Additionally, the speed of the pro stick flicks on next gen will determine whether you shoot a high arcing shot, that's a slow flick, or a flat shot, that's a fast flick. And there's going to be a bonus for shooting with an ideal shot arc. So basically, Derek, you can shoot these rainbows if you have the a slow flick, or you can shoot a very flat shot with a fast flick, and there's also going to be an ideal arc on the shot. So interesting idea, but again, it's going to be the similar shooting mechanics as current gen, which have proven to be a little bit divisive, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand why we're trying to reinvent the wheel on this and adding all these complicated mechanics and complicated ideas, especially if they can't be implemented right and fair. Right, I mean, yeah. I guess I don't understand it. And I'll say this again. Shooting a basketball isn't a super complicated thing, right? It's not a super complicated thing. There's various levels of skills and whatnot and stuff. But when you're shooting a basketball, it's an up and down motion and there's a release point, right? There doesn't need to be all of this complication involved in it. And what they should be doing is working more on the basic mechanics on jump shooting and making it feel good and be fair, as opposed to adding all of these different variables. We talked about this as far as like Mike Wang, when he was talking about layups, he had to use all 280 characters to describe how to effectively shoot a layup. He was like, you turn the stick this way, and then you turn it counterclockwise, and then you release it at this point. Mike, it's a damn layup.
Yeah. Like
this, you know what I mean? So overcomplicating the game and, you know, trying to quote unquote create a skill gap. If you're going to do that, you have to, you better damn make sure, excuse my language, you better make sure that you're putting it in properly and that the mechanics work right, or you're going to get those mostly negative reviews. You're going to get that that pushback, and you're going to get people saying that it's not fair, because in reality, like I've talked about with the video examples, it still doesn't make sense.
Well, complex and contrived doesn't necessarily equal, first of all, good, and it doesn't equal a skill gap. And there's a lot of other issues with 2K that when you talk about a skill gap, and I had a whole thread about this, which I also posted in the forum and linked to, and got a bit of traction on Twitter, and it seemed to resonate with quite a few people. When you've still got so many canned moments that really determine how successful you are, animation selection and so forth, the whole idea of a skill gap is kind of ridiculous, because it's less... first of all, mastering one input, and the whole thing with modded controllers. That's a controversy that came out after we recorded the show, our shows with Josh and Dave, and so we're coming to the party a bit late on that. Patch 104 has supposedly addressed the modded controllers. We will see how effective that is, where people use the scripting devices to script a perfect input, and it was really affecting online play. So there's so many problems with the idea of the skill gap, and we've talked about it on the previous show, having that fair and gentle learning curve rather than a steep cliff. You don't need contrived mechanics, and especially online where you've got that input lag as well, it's such a problem.
Can I bring something up? I this is what really frustrates me.
Sure.
You know what gamers really enjoyed? And you remember this, because I think we both talked about this at the time. You know what gamers really enjoyed? When 2K gave you the opportunity, by using the right stick, to choose which side of the rim you finished on.
Yeah.
Or to go first with your layup, right? Why was that not enough? Like, listen, the ability to, like for me, you know, from, you know, being able to, on a broadcast view with camera relative controls, you know, if I want to finish on the right side of the hoop, you know, I push down on the stick and I'm finishing on the right side of the hoop. If I want to finish on the left side, I'm pushing up on the stick. If I'm, you know, on a certain side of the court, if I push the stick closest to the baseline while I'm driving, with turbo, I could do a reverse dunk. Without turbo, I can do like a reverse layup. Or if the guy is doesn't have a reverse dunk in his package, he can, you know, I can turbo baseline and do a reverse layup with turbo. And for those people that didn't care about using that, the shooting mechanics by using the button and just using the button to drive all the time were also sound and fun and whatnot. What was wrong with that? People loved that, right? Like there is a reason. I'm just going to say this again. Gameplay is paramount. It's so important. It's the reason why games like 2K17, 2K16, etc., were getting 6s and 7s by users, right? Or getting mixed or positive reviews on Steam. It's the reason why those games were reviewed better, because at the end of the day, it's the on-court experience that we're spending the most time with. And if the mechanics make more sense, like they did, like I was talking about, you know, finishing it on the proper side of the hoop, using the stick that way, you know, the shooting mechanics feeling sound and fair overall, that's why you're going to get those more positive reviews. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, it comes down to an issue that we have talked about a lot. I mentioned it in my article about community issues that were spotlighted by 2K21, in particular by the shooting mechanics, and that is elitism. There was a post on Reddit a few years back from somebody who, from another developer of another game, who was talking about how the MMO, what do they call it? The MMOification of NBA 2K. Bit of a tongue twister there. They were talking about not just the microtransactions and whatnot, but the grinding mechanics of my career and my team, but also the way that it's really cozying up to the elite players and making the elite players feel good and really catering to them so they can look down at everybody else, and the whole get good mentality. It having those more complex controls that people who do master them and shoot 28 of 44 from 3 online, that they it makes them feel good, and it makes everyone else feel bad. You know,
I just want to put that in with artificial boosts.
Yeah,
they're not shooting 28 for 44 just by shooting 28 for 44.
No, not,
But go ahead,
not,
yeah.
not at all. But that's the thing, and it's catering to the elitists. It's catering to the people who love the metagame. It's not necessarily people who love basketball strategy or the sport of basketball, but it's more about winning by any means necessary and winning by mastery of mechanics more so than basketball strategy, which again sounds kind of elitist on my part. But the point is that it really is catering towards that elitist attitude of online and get good and sneering at noobs and all that kind of stuff. If they're still called noobs, scrubs, whatever. But you get what I'm coming from. That's the issue. What it is, it's because if you have those contrived, those complex mechanics, if you master them, you can feel really good, and you can feel like you're better than somebody else, that you're elite. And it's not so much about the basketball. It's not so much about the competition, healthy competition. It's about sneering down your nose, looking at your nose, and sneering at somebody else.
But what they're doing is they're alienating the majority of basketball games.
Absolutely, yeah, no
That's
doubt.
you get
It's what it
those
comes down
mostly
to, straight
overwhelmingly.
up.
I'm just, let's be real. Overwhelmingly negative reviews and all the negative scores and all of that stuff. And I'll say again, and I want to make this a point, artificial boosts are not basketball and they're not skill. And a lot of what you're talking about, those performances, are from artificial boosts that don't technically separate somebody from a skill, a basketball skill aspect. It's just a boost that they have that give them an advantage. And again, the shooting mechanics don't work properly by default. They have issues with the mechanics, and that's also an issue. So I agree, and I think that we'll say again, the bottom line is they're alienating the majority of people who want to play basketball video games.
And the
We need to cut
online scene, it should be welcoming. It should be welcoming to everybody. Not everybody, it shouldn't be easy for everybody to dominate. There should be a learning curve. There should be different tiers of players. There should be in fact, that's how you get the great competitive scene. At the upper echelons, you do have this great competitive scene that scales down to the more competitive and casual and rec league players, if you want to call it that. But it should be welcoming. That's why you need the proper matchmaking. And I've brought up Rocket League so many times on the podcast and in articles of how they've done it right with their matchmaking and their ranking systems. The 2K just kind of has, and of course in the Playground it's all based on cosmetic items and my rep and things like that. So 2K's online scene is very toxic, and these are the things they need to address moving forward. And it's not about putting in the neighborhood, because they're talking about there's going to be this new hub that's beyond the neighborhood in 2K21 next gen. It's not about that. It's about getting obviously the proper gameplay mechanics, but also proper matchmaking and making gamers getting gamers to be able to be feel welcome to the game. You can learn at your own pace, and that is how you get good. Some people may work well being thrown into the deep end. Most people are just going to be frustrated and just driven away from the scene, and the elitism is just killing the online scene, the lack of matchmaking and everything else that really fosters that toxic atmosphere. And that's the things you need to address. These are the core elements of the experience, on top of the core gameplay mechanics, of course, that 2K needs to be working on. And of course, we'll be learning more about that in developer blogs to come. But I'm not optimistic that those these and going back to the trailer, none of that is in the trailer, and it won't be in any of the trailers, I imagine. But these are the concerns I have about that core experience, that how the game feels on the sticks, not just from the gameplay, but also the way gameplay translates into all the game modes and everything, and the general experience of what it's like to play virtual basketball in NBA 2K. There's so many concerns with all those design concepts that a flashy trailer is just not going to get me, man.
I'll say this again. Over 90%, probably over 95%, maybe even 99% of gamers just choose a difficulty level and play.
Yeah.
I just want to put that, they're not messing with sliders. They're choosing a difficulty level and they're putting the game on. There's an expectation that the game is going to play a certain way by default. And gamers shouldn't have to go in and make hours of adjustments on sliders and do tons of testing to try to improve an experience. And for those modes where you can't make those adjustments, the modes that they're pushing gamers to, remember that too. They're pushing gamers to my team. They're pushing gamers to online play. They're pushing gamers to park and all that stuff. You can't make those adjustments. So the majority of gamers are being put out by this strategy by the suits of 2K. And unfortunately, it's what they promote. And I'm, You know, I said this to you off air. I said, I wish I had a lot of money. Love to have a lot of money to try to put my own stamp on a basketball game. Because I do, you know, no, I'm not claiming to be perfect, but I do feel like I understand what gamers want. We did an entire episode on what gamers want, right?
Yeah.
And you know what? Would I be profitable? That's questionable. But I do believe that, you know, this is not what gamers want. And I think you can tell by the reviews.
But, you know, as far as what gamers want, I think we do have our finger on the pulse. I'd certainly like to think that. And that sometimes there's old-school approaches or different approaches to what that whole idea of an alternative is so important. We've talked about how Basketball Classics really captured our imagination. You know, to go back to our talk with Josh and Dave and all the times we've talked about it. Something like, you know, and I brought it up as a joke, but Untitled Goose Game. Such a simple concept for a puzzle game that has really resonated with a lot of people, because with the aesthetic and the whole thing with the memes that have come around the titular Goose, of course. But even just the basic concept of that puzzle game has really resonated with people, to the fact that it can have a title of Untitled Goose Game, essentially, and still just be so popular. And Shovel Knight and all kinds of throwback games like that, I think that it would find a market, basically, if we had such resources. But, of course, such resources are very difficult to come by. A couple other things from the gameplay blog as far as shooting are concerned. Fast flicks and aiming in the direction of the backboard will allow us to perform bank shots again. This also works for layups, so you'll be able to choose whether you want to make bank shots for layups and jump shots. I mean, it's a new way of doing things that we were able to do as of 2K20 by just pressing up on the stick, quite frankly.
You can do that in 2K17.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it's not, I mean, that's a concept that, you know, my brother and I, we could go bank when we want on 2K17 on shooting. So, I mean, that's not new. I mean, we've talked about this, right? A lot of times they promote things in a dev blog that's been done before.
Yep.
But they treat it as new. So yeah. It's slight, but yeah, I get it. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And yeah, there's a couple more that we'll be getting to shortly that are prime examples of that. The shot meter has been made more readable, standing out against various court colors, no longer scales smaller with faraway camera views, which I think is a very good quality of experience change there. And an arrowhead helps identify the ideal release point for a green. The make window, which is now colored blue, scales according to the difficulty of the shot, and missing the window completely results in a miss. Also, new visual effects for green releases, which can be selected under the options, which that last part's not very exciting to me. I don't think it's probably won't be very exciting to you. But interestingly there, especially as it relates back to our conversation about the current-gen version where I was missing shots in the make window and making them outside the window, it sounds like that's going to be much harsher for next-gen, so that if you are in the make window, that is how you make the shot. If you are outside that, it is going to be a miss. So they're going very harsh with that approach, and that's not necessarily a bad idea. I mean, that's how you would think the shot meter is supposed to work, or the shooting mechanics, as far as timing goes, that if you are within the window, it's... If you're within the window, it's a chance. If you're green release, it's you get it. If you're outside the window, you miss. And that's not how it's working in current gen. So that at least sounds like they're polishing it for next gen. We'll see how it works, of course. But on paper, at least, that seems okay.
I have a couple thoughts on that. Number one, that's kind of just how Playgrounds works, where it's 0% outside the meter.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, so that's exactly the way that Playgrounds works. A couple things real quick. So Ryan Parks, you're familiar with him.
Yep.
On Twitter, he had mentioned, you know, more visibility for the meter, something that makes the meter stand out a little bit more. He even mentioned making it larger or whatever. So I think he'll appreciate some of that aesthetic appeal to the meter, as far as it's probably going to be easier to view for him. The biggest issue that I have with the whole missing outside the window is if they're going to use that for timed layups, there's going to be a huge problem. You think you're missing layups now. The random animations that generate when you're going to the hoop makes it oftentimes almost impossible to get the cursor in the middle of the meter, like in the window. So I'm very curious to see how that works. Well, if layups are going to miss 100% of the time outside the meter, you thought people were missing layups now. Let's see what happens. So,
well, to the next point, release timing is disabled for layups when using the shoot button in next gen, but will be effect when using the pro stick. The left stick can also be used to decide which side of the basket to finish on, and they are claiming that layup selection has been tuned to avoid defenders more intelligently, so picking better animations and on top of being able to finish left or right with the left stick, and also aiming with the right stick if you wish, or just having no timing with the shoot button for layups, there's supposedly better animation selection and more intelligent elusiveness of the defense. And they're also claiming fewer canned moments in the paint. On paper, it sounds like your concerns, and I share those concerns, are being addressed on paper. And I hate to beat a dead horse here, but we have heard that before. But again, if that is the way it's going to work out, and certainly disabling timing when using the shoot button for layups, I think that could work out.
Yeah, I'm not feeling that. How am I going to explain this? So, like you said, they're finishing on a certain side of the basket is going to be the left stick, as opposed to going up and finishing with the right stick, choosing which side of the basket, right?
You can choose with the right stick, but you're going to have to deal with shot aiming.
See what I mean? So that means that the shot aiming would need to be incredibly sharp and realistic, and the animations and mechanics overall would need to make sense.
Yeah.
So when you're shooting and you're choosing a side of the basket to go on, I don't see why that wouldn't be tied to the right stick, like it was in 2K17 and past games. Again,
up to 2K20.
What was that?
Up to 2K20, we were able to do that as well. So
yeah, exactly. So, like, the point is that I'm not feeling that. I understand that there's like, oh, well, now you can use the shoot button, you know, and then that takes off the timing aspect. But now they're not giving gamers that, like, they're taking away an option, right?
Yeah, you'll use a shoot button plus a left stick, left or right.
Right, and then they're saying, okay, so now you can, you know, you have to time it. You choose your side of the hoop that you're going to finish on with the left stick. You're going to use the right stick, and you're gonna time it. And, again, if they're saying a 0% chance of hitting outside of the window, and I don't care what they said about animations there. We've heard stuff like that before. Yeah, I'm not super optimistic about that. I sound really negative here, but I just think they are making this so complicated.
Well, Mike does say that you will miss bunnies around the rim if you don't get the timing right with the right stick. So it will be possible to miss for easy laps, which players do in real life, but if it is more complicated than it needs to be, yeah, like you say, it's the contrived nature.
I have my fingers crossed that when Live 22 gets released, because like I said, I think it will, when Live 22 gets released, they really take the pulse and they really know, understand what gamers want. And they, you know, there's going to be mechanics in that game that have, like, you know, they're going to seek microtransactions and stuff like that. That's just part of the nature of gaming, unfortunately, today. But that what they focus on in order to get people to play the game is actually that on-court awesome gameplay experience.
Absolutely. And controls that aren't contrived.
Yeah, like that they actually make sense, and that they like that skill is actually a part of it, like actually represented, and it's represented mechanically properly. But yeah, go ahead, continue, I guess.
I think with the right stick, you don't have to use the left stick to finish, or you can, but it's also, but again, you've got to then aim as well, so it does come down to that contrived feeling, which we've criticized on current gen, and it is proving to be a preview of next gen as we figured it would. Let's see. Off the dribble jumpers have been revamped with new signature packages, which are split into the categories of controlled and high momentum. Controlled jumpers, off the dribble being a bit more manageable, as you would expect, whereas high momentum, they're a bit more difficult, but players who are able to make high momentum jump shots, tough leaners and faders and whatnot, will apparently have abilities to do so in animations that allow it. So they've revamped some of those dribbling moves and dribbling into jumpers, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, here's my thing. So do you remember back? I'm sounding like such a grouch on this podcast, so I want to apologize to everybody. Do you remember back in 2K16 we had four size ups?
Yep.
So do you remember that we had side, left, right size ups, back size ups, front size ups? Then 2K17, they were like, screw it, we're going to get rid of three of the size ups and you can only do a front size up. Then later on, they were like, you know what, we'll screw it even more. You can't trigger size ups with 2K20. And, you know, we're going to take a bunch of the size ups out of the game. And, you know, every now and then you might luck into a size up, or do you can trigger some sort of thing by trigger, you know, like pushing the joystick in all these different directions. And you have to like put it together like a fighting game, right?
Yeah.
Like a
chain it together.
Chain them together. It's again a thing that I think that they are making way too complicated. And I don't think that dribbling has improved in 2K. I think they've gone backwards over the years as far as the feel. And the feel of changing directions with the dribble, the feel of changing hands with the dribble, the feel of pacing with the dribble. I feel like they've gone backwards, and it's another thing that they're overcomplicating. What was wrong, again, with the 2K16 system where you had a size-up option for going each way and you could break out of it whenever you wanted, right? And you had your standard good-feeling dribbling, where if you weren't in a size-up, you felt good about dribbling with the right stick. In general. So again, I just feel like they are overcomplicating it. That's just my opinion.
It is. I'm not feeling the dribbling in 2K21 current gen. I liked it well enough last year. Like, it worked in 2K20 well enough for me at least. But yeah, I'm not feeling it in 2K21, so I'm a bit skeptical about that as well. Now, here's a point that has raised some discussion in the forum. Again, as far as technology allowing it, and I think we've all come to the conclusion that it's less a case of the new tech and more the case of the rebuilt code, built from the ground up, as they're saying. Improvements to inverse kinematics and foot planning will see players position their feet better around the three-point line, so basically less stepping on the line or having to slide backwards to get the three, better foot planting and positioning around the three-point line. That is good news if it works out, but yeah, it is something that probably could have been worked out by now, at least with a better motion system. And again, it speaks to that the problems with the motion system of 2K that came with 2K18, those exaggerated movements trying to just feather behind the line and so forth. It really shows that motion system that they introduced in 2K18 was a real bust.
I laugh at that being promoted as some sort of feature. That it even needs to be addressed at this point. I'm sorry. I play 2K14 PC and I play 2K13 as well. You know, we play those older games, right?
Yep, that's right.
And there is no issue whatsoever as far as sliding into shots, really. There's no issue as far as your guy getting behind the three-point line. When they move, when you try to get into the corner for a shot, you can do it because the foot planting is sound. We've talked about it before, and I've shown this on video with side-by-sides. You can do the exact same thing in like 2K16 and 2K17 where you can run up right to the three-point line, plant, and shoot. You can, when you're on the fast break, if you have a player fade out to the corner, he fades out to the corner, plants his feet, and he can shoot right off the catch with no issues whatsoever. This is something that started with 2K18 and has somehow gradually gotten worse. I played 2K18, I talked about this recently, and the foot planting is worse in 2K21 and 2K20 than it is in 2K18. You weren't sliding as much, and you could control your player a little bit better in 2K18. So it's even gotten worse over the years. And it is super frustrating because this is a very simple idea, right? And it's something that they've done before. Like, they had great foot planning in past games. So yeah, another thing where I sound like a grouch, the fact that that is listed as some sort of feature or promoted thing is really frustrating.
I'm glad to hear it, but again, it's as you allude to there, the fact that it's put forward as a next gen idea, something that wasn't possible before, is somewhat insulting.
It really is, and I want to point something out for people like that probably think I'm being super negative on this podcast. I can back up what I'm talking about with video. Right. And I've done that before in some of my comparison videos and whatnot, about the foot planting and about the sliding. I've shown on video a lot of my gameplay issues that I'm talking about here. I'm not just being negative. It's just I get myself and the majority of gamers get more of a negative experience than a positive one. And that's just the way I feel.
Now, here's the other next-gen tech that was not just current-gen, but also last-gen as well. And we'll get into that in a moment. The speed of size-up moves now depends on the speed at which you flick the pro stick. This allows ball handlers to have different gears, switching speeds, and better elude defenders with quick and clever moves. Now, that sounds pretty good, but I want to bring up, and I brought this up in my both on Twitter and also in my summary, my breakdown of the gameplay blog, is very similar to the quick strike ball handling tech that was introduced in NBA Live 08 for 360 and PS3, where how rapidly you moved the right stick depended on how quickly you made that crossover, and you could just quickly move it back and forth, and it come down into that very quick hunch over for the very quick dribble. So this is something we've actually seen before. I'm actually surprised that neither company has really revisited it until now, but they have with this. And again, I have no objection to the idea, but it is kind of funny that an idea that has been done before by NBA Live, no less, actually, it has come back, and it's kind of taken them a while, and it's not necessarily a next-gen thing. It's probably going to work out better than Live 08, or certainly is a possibility that it will, but it's actually not a new idea.
Over a decade old.
Yeah.
You know, the other part pointed that, and I talked to you about this off-air when we were discussing this stuff a few days ago. You could do that, a bit of that, in older games, in 2K17, depending on how how fast you flick the stick. Go back and look at some of my videos for listeners that are using the 0607 Nuggets or the 0506 76ers, or even using like the 0102 Kings, for my modded rosters, using Allen Iverson or Mike Bibby, or my video with the Grizzlies using Jason Williams and whatnot. Look at the different pacing on my moves that I'm doing with these players, as far as you can see me leaning in one direction and flicking the stick fast into the opposite direction, and it creating an incredibly fast dribble move that I have more acceleration off of. So I think that there's been that, depending on the game, I think there's been still a little bit of that after in games, after Live 08.
I just remember that the quick stride ball handling is actually borrowed tech from NBA Street Home Court, where you could chain together moves very easily. That was the other thing with Quick Strike, that you could chain together animations. But that was borrowed tech from NBA Street Home Court, and the ability to make those quick dribbles by rapid, it was a button press in that game, but by rapidly using the dribbling controls to be able to perform a more rapid dribble. Yeah, that tech was kind of 2006, 2007.
Yeah, it's wild. And you know what? We've talked about this before. Game companies borrow from each other. They're trying to emulate the same sport and stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. I have no issues with them, even if they were like trying to copy Quick Strike completely. I don't even really have an issue with that. But the idea that, some people might think that's a new thing, which I guarantee the large majority of the population does, because they don't know that it's been done before. But yeah, I also want to point out, we have no idea how functional this is going to be.
Indeed.
Mechanically, or anything like that. And the last thing I wanted to point out too, really quick, just to revisit going back to like the skating thing, you had talked about, hey, it sounds good, right? Like, oh, they're addressing this. But then you watch that work in progress gameplay video and you see Tim Hardaway floating above the court.
Mm.
His movement breaking and stuff like that. So I'm very skeptical at this point about this whole thing.
We take these blogs with a more than a grain of salt, a truckload of salt at times. There are more signature moves, including signature step backs, which are now performed by pressing LT or L2, depending on your console and controller. New triple threat moves have also been added. Similarly, park dribble moves are performed by pressing L3 and require the Hall of Fame tight handles badge, which is also the case in current gen as of the latest patch. So neither you or I are particularly into park, so that's probably not something that's going to affect us. But that again is something that's being built off tweaks that are being made in the current gen version, of changing the controller assignment for park dribble moves, and also requiring that Hall of Fame tight handles badge to do, and adding more signature moves and the signature step backs and so forth. Not surprised to see that.
It's supposed to build from the ground up. They should have said built from 2K21 PS4.
Yeah,
that's what they should have said.
Yeah. Passing physics have been improved, such as the bounce pass, bounce location on bounce passes. They're talking about how friction and angles making more of a difference. Bounce alley-oops are now possible. They showed some videos of that, and lobs off the glass have been reworked. They showed a couple of those as well. And for the first time in NBA 2K, bounce touch passes are also possible. Now the passing game, the way passes work with physics and everything is very important. So again, this is another situation where if it's as good as advertised, it could be a significant improvement. As far as bounce passes, the animation selection, which I don't think they really mentioned it in the blog, but that is another thing as well. Well, actually, there is something that's kind of along those lines. But so they are claiming to have reworked passing physics. I think a couple of people, it might have been you as well, noted some of a couple of passes looking a bit floaty still in the next gen trailer. So to expect perfection there or maybe a complete overhaul or improvement is maybe asking too much. Probably asking too much, but that is apparently one of the things they've been working on. And quite frankly, there's a lot with passing that does need to be worked on.
Yeah, I mean, well, first off, self alley oops are not new. We just did one the other night on NBA 2K19, and then you can do them on 2K17. So I mean, self alley oops are not new. As far as bouncing it to yourself,
bouncing to a teammate. That one.
Or bouncing to a teammate. I don't know if I've seen that.
That is new. To be honest, that is new.
Yeah, that's new. Yeah, but you remember on 2K13, you could do spins into dunks.
Yep.
Like you could like do that. So they took that out for a couple of years. You weren't allowed to do it. Then they brought it back for 2K19, where you could do spins into dunks. And then I think you can do them in 2K20 and 2K21. So it's a lot of sometimes these ideas are like revisiting. It's like, hey, we had this before. It's been out for a couple of years. Let's bring it back.
Yeah,
let's promote it.
Which I'm all for if they do it better. If it comes back, it's welcome. But yeah.
Oh, 100%. Well, passing. So yeah, I wanted to get that into that really quick. A legacy issue, obviously, is floaty passes like that you can't control. They're just floaty by default. And by the time it gets to your player, there's a defender in front of him who does like a blind steal, or the pass floats over to the guy to the player. And the defender isn't even looking at the ball and it like bounces off of them, or it bounces off of their arm that's up or something like that. This still happens in 2K21. You also have the canned pass steals where you'll try to do like a post entry pass and the ball will literally not go towards your player's hands. It will go right to the defender, which means there's something in the mechanics that make it so that pass is going to be stolen no matter what. Right.
Yeah.
So you also have an issue where passes just in general are delayed based on heavy animations, heavy catching animations, heavy throwing animations, etc. So yeah, passing has had some issues for years. I think it was the best in 2K16, in 2K17, and I think that it was pretty darn good in 2K15. You revisited that game and you thought it was solid.
I think
passing on this gen. Yeah, I think the passing on this gen was the best on those three games.
To that point, pass accuracy and catches have, again, allegedly been improved and made smoother. They've spent some time working on catch reliability to enhance that, especially in scenarios such as catching a pass in the corner or along the sidelines. They've referred to them as tricky situations, catches in tricky situations. So it sounds like that's one of the things that they're... The legacy issues that they are trying to address there, again, to what extent remains to be seen. But that is some acknowledgement of that issue, I suppose. Again, the proof will be in the pudding.
Yep. I mean, that's the thing. And by the way, you know, we're going to be able to pick up on a lot of some of stuff that's going to, we can see that's going to frustrate us in when they show some like true 5-on-5 gameplay. But nothing compares to getting your hands on the sticks.
Not at all.
So yeah, that's the thing.
And the final point from my breakdown here, a new lead pass mechanic involves tapping the triangle or Y button to lead a teammate to the basket behind the three-point line, and holding the button performs a regular pass. I'll admit that I don't use the lead pass mechanic very often in the current generation. Good to have, I suppose, but yeah, I'll admit that that's a control that I overlook. I will admit that.
I'd say the large majority of gamers do not use it. And that's just my opinion, and maybe I'm wrong, but that's from, I never hear anybody talking about it, etc. So, I mean, with me, you know how, you've seen my videos, icon passing is the way we play. because I'm mostly offline, my league play now. And if I do play my team, obviously I'll do it there, but I use Icon Passing like 100% of the time.
Yeah. Very, very close to for me. Yeah.
So that's pretty important. But I do need to make a point that you can't lean on Icon Passing either. The game needs to be good at passing by default for those that don't want to use Icon Passing, meaning if you're trying to post somebody up on the same side of the floor and you direct the pass to them, it shouldn't go to the guy across court.
Exactly.
Which we've seen be an issue before. But by the way, that's the reason I started using Icon Passing back in the day.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I always used Icon Passing some of the time, going back to the very early days of it in NBA Live, where it was called Direct Passing, which is why I sometimes still call it Direct Pass rather than Icon Pass. Icon Pass is 2K's vernacular for it, and Direct Pass is what 2K, what Live rather called it. Same concept, using the a button to directly pass using an icon that relates to one of the face buttons that corresponds to a player. So that's basically the blog broken down. Once again, you can go back and read that in full if you want to get Mike's words as they are in their original form. Again, there's a lot of stuff there that could really improve the game, and if it is as good as advertised or even half as good as advertised, then next gen will at least take a step forward from what's been done currently. Whether it's, again, we can speculate what's possible on the current generation and what needed next gen tech and what just needed to throw out the motion system and whatnot that's being used from the last few years. That kind of stuff is promising. There's a lot more to learn about AI and whatnot and other movement and so forth. And those will be coming in the forthcoming gameplay blogs. There's at least two more gameplay blogs on top of other blogs that will be coming through. But those are the fundamentals of the game: dribbling, passing, shooting. Good stuff there, but again, it's one of those things that we have to take with a grain of salt because we've been burned in the past. And again, some of this stuff probably could have been done in current gen.
Yeah, I also want to point out if those raw, and I'm just warning anybody who listens to this podcast that maybe works for 2K. Because I think we do have some listeners, possibly, that have something to do with the game. If there's those roster issues again on next gen, I'll make another thread. I'm sorry. It's just a complete disrespect to the game, and it really dramatically affects the gameplay. I just want to let you know that I'm going to look at them. I'm sorry.
Well, that thread got a lot of traction.
And only, it did.
Only a couple of people had dumb remarks in response to it, so...
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing. And it's not a threat or anything. It's just saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to be looking into it.
Yeah.
Because I'm sick of the players getting disrespected. And I think that it affects the gameplay in a huge way as far as the way the players play on the floor, where they are on the floor, if they're going to shoot certain shots, how they play, all of that stuff. So, yeah, I'll be looking into it.
Some might say it's an infection of sorts. Metaphorically put it out there as such.
A greed, an infection of greed. Mm. How about that?
A petri dish of horrible ratings. But we will keep our eyes out for that. Of course, we will cover the blogs and trailers and anything else that comes through with next gen, regardless of when we're going to actually be able to play on those consoles. Speaking of the release date, we do actually have the release dates available for next gen. It's November 10th for Xbox, Series X and Series S. Globally, they actually get it first. PlayStation 5, some of the regions will be getting that a bit sooner, including, of course, the US, Canada, Australia. What are some of the other ones? So November 10th, Xbox Series X and S. November 12th on PlayStation 5 in the US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Mexico, and South Korea. And November 19th on PS5 in all other regions. So there's a couple of different regional release dates there. Again, we'll see what we end up doing with our consoles. But yeah, we will be getting some more blogs and whatnot, D, and we will be covering them as moving forward, as always.
It's an exciting time. I mean, we're never short on things to talk about, but it is exciting to get all this new footage and everything. Unfortunately, I wish I could be a little bit more positive on here, and I'll try. But yeah, I mean, we have stuff to look forward to.
I do have an article coming out about this, about cynicism and whatnot. And I do think once you've been playing games for a long time, and you do see some of these issues come up, these legacy issues come up over the years, and you do, and you've seen some of the things that happen with the developer blogs and bullshotting with screenshots, to use the Penny Arcade, the term they coined, and misleading trailers.
Yeah, and the greed.
It's difficult to you know, once you've seen how the sausage is made, as the saying goes, it's difficult to eat said sausage, or enjoy said sausage as much as before. So there's a bit of that that goes on, and I think that's something that we will, you know, if we get to frame our criticisms. We want the game to be good, don't get us wrong. I think I speak for us both on that point. We do want the games to be great moving forward. It's just that we have seen some of these issues, and we are left with a bit of cynicism, and cynicism at worst and skepticism at least.
Yep, and I look at it, this would be one thing if people could point to this podcast too and say, oh, he's being so negative, but the game, everybody loves the game. The proof is in the pudding, guys. Go look at the reviews. Look what people are saying. Look at Steam. Look at the user reviews. Look at what people are saying on Twitter. Look at the frustrations they're having. It's not a secret that there's problems.
We're not alone.
And look at their thread. Right. Look at the roster thread that I displayed, and look at the lack of attention to detail. The priorities are not in the right place, and it's not fair to the gamer. So I said this on Virtual Hoop Dreams, I believe, as well. I said, you know what? You can't be afraid to give feedback. You should be giving that feedback if your experience is negative as a result of these issues and stuff. So I'm not going to apologize for giving feedback. I'll apologize if you guys think I'm being a little bit of a grouch and you're like, hey, Derek, smile. But, you know, at the same time...
Grab a Snickers.
But at the same time, you know, that feedback is important, and I'm not going to apologize for critiquing obvious flaws in the game.
There is something to be said about keeping expectations reasonable, keeping them low, and being surprised, pleasantly surprised by how things turn out. So, I mean, I would love to be proven wrong. And, you know, we've gone down, we've broken down the blog.
I want to be proven wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Please. And that is the benefit of perhaps keeping the expectations low. And it's not so that we can say, see, I told you so. Although we may veer into that territory at times because it's very tempting. It's difficult not to when you are proven right, of course, to resist the temptation. But it really isn't about that. It is trying to put this in perspective, to keep a level head, to keep expectations reasonable, knowing that even in the best case scenario, there are still going to be some issues, some teething problems as they work everything out with the new tech and the new code and whatever. So there is value in tempering our expectations to a reasonable level and hoping for you know, trying to remain cautiously optimistic, but leaving that room there to really be wowed and to be impressed by a game, giving it room to do that and not getting hopes up too much, realizing that things can go awry, that we have heard some of these things before, and to give it a chance and not to get too ahead of ourselves and set ourselves up for a huge disappointment. And hopefully we won't be disappointed. Hopefully we will be pleasantly surprised.
Fingers crossed.
As always.
It's our job to talk about it. So.
That's right. And talk we do for a couple of hours, as we always tend to do on the NLC podcast. But that has brought us to the end of episode number 344 of the NLC podcast, covering next-gen impressions, or next-gen preview impressions, as well as some patch talk, of course, at the top of the show, and how we're feeling about 2K21 current-gen. We now turn the discussion over to you. Let us know how you feel about those topics, what you're thinking of the previews so far, what you're thinking of current-gen so far, the patches. And as we always say, Derek, we want to hear from people and get those topic suggestions as well. So we're all about that feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. The more comments, the better. The more feedback on the show. We want to hear what you guys think. And this was our 43rd episode together. And I was trying to think about this. Famous number 43 is in NBA history.
It's the most famous one. It's 44.
Off the top.
It's 44.
Is it 44?
It's 44. Okay. Yeah.
Because 43 would have been Grant Long, probably, is the most famous number 43.
From memory, Corey Blount. That's the only one I can think is coming to mind.
Number 44. I mean, we got Jerry West, Rick Fox. I had to say Jerry West before Rick Fox. Pete Maravich, Yuri Welch for the Celtics, number 44. So I was just trying to so
Danny Ainge.
Should do that every show. Danny Ainge, yep.
And, it's funny, but we actually did in the early days, we did mention a jersey number, then we kind of got above 50 and it episode 50, and it became a bit harder.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, next week we have Rafe LaFrentz, but also, obviously, number 45, Michael Jordan.
Fantastic, yeah.
But, yeah, it's very interesting. Anyway, yeah, no, definitely feedback. Give us comments. Tell us what you think of the show.
And you can do that in the comments section of the bulletins on the front page, in the forum, and, of course, in our various social media outlets, which we shall be reading off very shortly. But before I get to that, the NLC podcast, of course, comes out each every week. On Sunday, comes out on the NLSC, which is nba-live.com. We're also on various podcatching apps and platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, or of course, keep streaming it on the NLSC itself. As long as you're tuning in each every week and enjoying the show, that is the main thing. And before I get to our socials, Derek, where can we find you? And I know you've been very busy lately. Of course, you are the host of Holding Court with Deeper 3, and you've been making some other appearances lately, which has been very cool to listen to.
Oh, thank you. No, I was on the Format podcast hosted by Bruce Hope with AAU basketball coach Andy Noel is also or Andy Noel, as who is also another guest. And it was a great conversation talking about, you know, has the basketball regressed? Where has it regressed? All of that stuff and the media's impact on the sport. So definitely check that out. I'll be recording Holding Court with D for Three episode 7 today, talking about similar topics. Also talking about Hakeem Olajuwon versus Tim Duncan, who I would rather have and who is the better player. You know, also echoing some of Robert Horry's comments on that comparison, who played with both. And also you can find me on Twitter at D4384. On YouTube, D4Three, on the NLSC as a contributor, D4Three, and I am also going to be recording Virtual Hoop Dreams Episode 3 probably within the next few days. So, yeah, definitely have a lot going on, but it's been kind of fun.
Busy man, and in demand, which is
yeah, all, I guess
always good to be. I am, of course, on Twitter at AndrewNLSC. The NLSC itself is on Twitter and Facebook at the NLSC. On Instagram, we are NLSC Basketball. YouTube is NBA Live Series Center. And, of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, nba-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But, yes, that's all for this week. Thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.